The final thing to look at on the topic of deferred consideration is the situation where sale proceeds are split, but the additional amount that the vendor will receive cannot be ascertained at the date of disposal. If the proceeds of sale to be brought into the CGD computation are both unascertainable and conditional, that is, they depend on a future event and the vendor does not know how much he will receive when he originally signs the contract, we calculate the gain by applying the Marron versus Ingalls principle. The case of Marron versus Ingalls involved the calculation of a capital gain when proceeds included an earn-out element and was heard in the House of Lords in 1980. In 1970, the vendor sold shares in a private family company. Contracts were signed in September 1970, so the tax year of disposal was 1970-71. The purchaser agreed to pay the vendor an immediate sum of £750 per share in cash. In addition, the purchaser agreed to pay the vendor a future sum if the company became listed on the stock exchange within a specified period. The consideration for the disposal therefore included an earn-out element. However, the amount that the vendor would receive on the flotation of the company was based on the share price of the company on the day it obtained a stock exchange listing. This meant that the additional consideration was not fixed in amount, i.e., it could not be ascertained at the date of disposal in September 1970. Therefore, in the case of Marron versus Ingalls, we had a situation when the payment of sale proceeds was not only conditional on a future event taking place, but the amount of the sale proceeds could not be ascertained at the time of the disposal. The question that the House of Lords had to consider was how the capital gain was calculated in the tax year 1970-1971. The main point of discussion was the amount of sale proceeds received by the vendor in September 1970. There was no doubt that the proceeds had to include the cash of £750 per share physically paid to the vendor in 1970. However, the revenue contended, and the courts agreed, that what the vendor had been given in September 1970 was not just £750 in cash, but they also had a piece of paper which gave them the right to receive a future capital sum. The court said that the right to receive future consideration was a valuable asset in itself and must be valued at the date of disposal. Here we have assumed that the right to receive future consideration was valued at £250, taking sale proceeds up to £1,000 per share. From this figure of sale proceeds, the vendor deducted his base cost to give a capital gain in 1970-71. This is the Marron versus Ingalls principle. When a vendor is given the right to receive deferred consideration, we must value that asset. Lawyers call this asset a shows in action and treat it as part of the disposal proceeds. In December 1972, the company floated, and at that point the vendor became entitled to additional consideration. In the event, the extra consideration was substantial, amounting to £2,825 per share. This figure was based on the share price of the company at the date of flotation. The revenue regarded this figure as a capital sum, which was chargeable to capital gains tax. However, for a CGT liability to arise, the disposal of an asset must take place. The revenue contended, and the courts agreed, that the asset being disposed of in December 1972 was the right to receive future consideration, i.e. the shows in action. The cost of this right was its market value at the date of the original disposal in September 1970. Here, using our figures, the base cost of this right is £250. The vendor therefore had an additional capital gain on the disposal of the right in 1972-1973. In our example, the gain is £2,575. The case of Marron versus Ingalls has established the principle that the right to receive cash is a capital asset in itself, and when that right is disposed of, a chargeable gain will arise. Let us now consider what would happen if a taxpayer made a loss on the disposal of the right. Going back to the Marron versus Ingalls example, on the original sale of the shares, the proceeds consisted of the cash received now plus the right to receive future cash. We valued this right at £250 per share. Let us assume that on the flotation of the company, the additional cash received was only £50 per share. At this point, the asset being disposed of is the right to receive future cash. This asset had a base cost of £250. On the disposal of the right, the taxpayer will be making a loss of £200 per share. The question is, what can the taxpayer do with this capital loss?
Under special rules, the loss on the disposal of the earn-out right can be carried back. This is at odds with general CGT principles, which only allow losses to be carried back if the taxpayer has died. The carry-back rules apply to individuals, trusts and estates only. The carry-back election is not available for companies. The individual must make an election for the loss to be carried back and treat it as a loss of that earlier year. The election is an all-or-nothing claim. There is no provision for carrying back part of the loss.
The time limit for the election is 1 year from the normal filing date for the return of the tax year in which the loss arose. Therefore, for a loss on disposal of a right in 2010-11 to be carried back, the election must be made by the 31st of January 2013. There is no restriction on how far the loss can be carried back. Therefore, a loss on the disposal of a right this year could be carried back and set against an original gain made, say, 10 years ago. The gain must have resulted in a CGT liability in that earlier tax year. This means that, in most instances, the election to carry back the loss will generate a CGT repayment. If the loss is not completely used up in that earlier tax year, it can be offset as any other loss, i.e. set against gains of the year it is incurred and carried forward. If the gain on the original disposal was deferred under the EIS or VCT reinvestment relief rules, the loss will be used against the deferred gain when it comes back into charge. We shall look at EIS and VCT reliefs later. Let us consider what happens when earn-out elements are offered in addition to share-for-share exchanges. Assume a vendor exchanges his old shares for new shares plus the right to future consideration. In this case, the normal share-for-share exchange rules will not apply on the earn-out element because the right to receive future consideration is a shows-in-action. It is not shares. A capital gain will therefore arise on the receipt of the earn-out right, and we would calculate the gain by treating the value of the right as a payment of cash. This will potentially leave the vendor with a CGT charge but no cash to settle his bill. To resolve this problem, if the earn-out element is eventually satisfied wholly by the issue of shares, Section 138A TCGA 1992 treats the right itself as shares. The usual share-for-share rules would therefore apply, and no gain would be charged on the receipt of the earn-out right. If the taxpayer does not want the share-for-share rules to apply, he may make an election to have them disapplied. In this case, the receipt of the earn-out will be treated as a chargeable disposal. The time limit for the election is the anniversary of the 31st of January following the end of the tax year of disposal, that is, 31st of January 2013 for disposals in 2010-11. This may be to his advantage if he either has losses to set against the gain which would otherwise arise, or if the gain is eligible for entrepreneur's relief. By way of illustration, Paul owns shares in Lasseter Limited. He formed the company in May 1998 by subscribing £60,000 for the entire share capital. Paul is the managing director. He makes disposals each year to use his annual exemption. On the 30th of August 2010, Paul sold all his shares in Lasseter Limited to the Napier Group. The sales contract provided for Paul to receive initial cash consideration of £600,000 and deferred earn-out consideration based on the profits of Lasseter Limited for the 2 years ended the 31st of December 2010 and 2011. The earn-out will be wholly satisfied in the form of new ordinary shares in Napier Group PLC. The earn-out right was valued at £400,000 at August 2010.
Paul's CGT position is as follows. He will have a capital gain on the receipt of the cash consideration of £600,000. This will qualify for entrepreneur's relief as Paul had more than 5% of the shares and worked for Lasseter Limited. However,
As the earn-out right will be satisfied by the issue of shares, Section 138A will apply. Section 138A automatically treats the right to receive future shares as a security. This means that the share-for-share exchange rules will apply, and no gain will arise on the receipt of the earn-out. The gain on the cash consideration is as follows. Proceeds are £600,000. The base cost of Paul's original shares is £60,000. However, the cash is £600,000 and the value of the earn-out right is £400,000. So we only take 60% of the base cost, being £36,000. This gives a gain of £564,000. This gain will qualify for entrepreneur's relief. Tax will be charged at the rate of 10%, giving a tax liability of £56,400. The base cost of the earn-out right will be £60,000 times 40%, being £24,000. The earn-out is satisfied in March 2012, with Paul receiving shares in Napier Group PLC valued at £575,000. There is therefore a disposal of the earn-out in return for shares. As the earn-out is treated as a security, this is treated as a share-for-share exchange. No gain arises, and the base cost of the new Napier Group PLC shares will also be £24,000. When these shares are sold, entrepreneur's relief will not be available unless Paul has a 5% holding and works for Napier Group PLC. Assuming Paul has taxable income in excess of the basic rate band, his CGT on an immediate sale of the shares for £575,000 in 2011-12 will therefore be as follows. Proceeds are £575,000. The base cost of the earn-out right is £24,000. This gives a gain of £551,000. CGT at 28% is £154,280. The total CGT payable by Paul is therefore £56,400 plus £154,280, giving £210,680. Alternatively, Paul could elect for the share-for-share exchange treatment on receipt of the earn-out right to be disapplied. In this case, the value of the earn-out right on takeover would be treated as cash and a chargeable gain arises. This gain is again eligible for entrepreneur's relief. The gain on takeover will now be recalculated as follows. Proceeds are now the cash of £600,000 plus the value of the earn-out right being £400,000. The base cost of the Lasseter Limited shares is £60,000, giving a gain of £940,000. This gain will qualify for entrepreneur's relief. CGT at 10% is £94,000. Moving now to the CGT treatment of the earn-out right. The base cost of the earn-out right will now be £400,000. The earn-out is satisfied in March 2012, with Paul receiving shares in Napier Group PLC valued at £575,000. There is therefore a disposal of the earn-out in return for shares. This time the earn-out is not treated as a security, so this is not a share-for-share exchange. A gain therefore arises on the disposal of the earn-out. Proceeds are £575,000, being the value of the earn-out at the date it is exchanged for shares. The base cost of the earn-out is £400,000, giving a gain of £175,000. This gain will not qualify for entrepreneur's relief, as the asset being sold is the earn-out. CGT at 28% is £49,000. If he makes an election under Section 138A, the total CGT payable by Paul is now £94,000 plus £49,000, giving £143,000. The election to disapply the share-for-share exchange treatment will therefore save Paul CGT of £67,680. The effective saving will be partially eroded by the fact that Paul will have to pay a larger amount of CGT on the 31st of January 2012 than he would have done had the election to disapply not been made. Paul now has shares in Napier Group with a base cost of £575,000. If these are sold immediately, there will be no capital gain. Finally, in this session, We'll look at how we deal with earnouts, which are satisfied by the issue of loan notes. Assume a vendor exchanges his old shares for the right to future consideration. The earnout will be satisfied by the issue of loan notes. Section 138A will again apply. Section 138A will treat the earnout right as a security. The share-for-share exchange rules therefore apply, and no gain is charged on the receipt of the earnout. The base cost of the earnout will be a proportion of the base cost of the original shares, depending on whether any cash proceeds are also received. When the earnout is eventually satisfied by the issue of loan notes, there is a disposal of the earnout right. We need to consider the CGT position at this stage. Whether a gain arises at this point will depend on whether the loan notes are QCBs. If the loan notes issued in satisfaction of the earnout are not QCBs, for example, the loan notes could be convertible or be in a foreign currency, the non-QCBs are treated as shares. The share-for-share exchange rules will apply, and the non-QCB will have a base cost equal to the base cost of the earnout. A gain will be charged when the non-QCBs are sold or redeemed. If the loan notes issued in satisfaction of the earnout are QCBs, for example, the loan notes are non-convertible and are expressed in sterling, there will be an exchange of a security, i.e. the earnout right, for a QCB. QCBs are not shares, therefore a gain will therefore arise on the disposal of the earnout. However, this gain will be frozen until the QCBs themselves are sold or redeemed. No entrepreneur's relief will be available when the gain arises on the redemption of the loan notes. This is because, as the gain relates to the disposal either of the earnout or the non-QCB, the gain does not relate to the original shares. If the taxpayer wants to take advantage of entrepreneur's relief on the disposal of the original shares, he could make an election to disapply the share-for-share treatment on the takeover, as illustrated earlier. To complete this session, let us attempt one practice question. We first calculate Stephanie's gain on the takeover. Stephanie received cash of £500,000 plus an earnout right worth £200,000. From this, we deduct the base cost of the shares of £25,000, giving a gain of £675,000. 2 years later, Stephanie received £180,000 in satisfaction of her earnout right. The base cost of the earnout was £200,000, so Stephanie has a loss on the disposal of the earnout of £20,000. This can be carried back against the original gain on the sale of her shares. The loss of £20,000 will be offset against the gain of £675,000, leaving a chargeable gain of £655,000. This concludes this session on earnouts and deferred consideration.